The Athletic.
Totally Football Show, European edition. Today, Real Madrid's big week, Barcelona's big corruption case, Bayern with João Cancelo's cultured foot, Inter heading to Porto in a storm, Galatasaray, the Super League's super team, and Parisians almost stopped in their tracks by a perky breast. All that and more in this Totally Football Show. It's Tuesday the 14th of March, you know, and we've got the classic Totally Football Show Euro lineup for you. Raphael Honigstein.
Good morning.
Alvaro Romeo.
Hola, hola.
James Horncastle.
Hello.
And Julien Laurent.
Bonjour.
Bonjour to you, Jules. You had a nice weekend?
Very nice, thank you.
Wow.
Very nice. I was at BT on Saturday for the score.
Ooh.
And Chris Sutton and Robbie Savage were obviously there, pondering what to do with their BBC.
Of all the words you could have used there.
Did they do 606?
They didn't do 606.
Did they not?
No, 606 was not, didn't happen on Saturday, like all the other BBC Five live sports, of course.
I was worried at one stage that they would put out the podcast we recorded on the Thursday.
All right.
And all of a sudden.
Were you worried about that, Rafa? sorry, listener. Well, Jules, that might well qualify as your moment of the weekend.
But I another one, actually, if you want to.
Should we start?
Yeah, let's start.
Right, you go.
I'll take you back to Friday night when Lille were hosting Lyon, which was a really, really good game. And Lyon were with Alexandre Lacazette, who'd been injured, who was on the bench, and we knew at some point he might come on. And he came on when Lyon were 2-1 down, and the first thing he did was concede a penalty. And Lille went 3-1 up, another brace from Jonathan David, which was great. And then Lacazette, the saviour, scored two goals in the space of 2 minutes to get a very, very good 3-3 draw for Lyon, who maybe didn't deserve it, but he showed again that he's their most important player by far, and without him, it's a very different story. So well done to him in a way, although he looked like a nightmare at the start with a penalty conceded, but then he was a saviour.
Very nice. James?
Cavalladonna, James. Got to be one of the goals of the season, although we did see another contender in the weekend in that Paulo Dybala goal for Roma in their defeat to Sassuolo. But yeah, Cavada, even Spalletti saying afterwards, a goal worthy of Maradona. In campo aperto, attenzione, Caloschelli dalla parte opposta, riceve la sfera, limite dell'area, entra in area, va Caloschelli, doppio dribbling, triplo dribbling, destro! Destro pazzesco di Caloschelli! Il Napoli è in vantaggio! Zigzags through several Atalanta players. I think there's eight around him when he scores this goal. And yeah, magnificent. Napoli keep on keeping on. 18 points clear now. Everyone behind them practically losing apart from Juventus, who hope to get that points penalty overturned and then they would go into second place. But yeah, it's got to be Cavara.
Excellent. Alvaro.
Yeah, in Spain, it has to be Valencia winning finally because they were in relegation when their game against Osasuna started. And then they managed to win 1-0. It wasn't easy for them. They are going through a very difficult season with the new manager, Rubén Baraja. They've been in relegation. They are going to fight for the relegation or to avoid it. And, you know, it was a difficult game for them because I think that they could have had a penalty that the referee didn't call. Then Hugo Duro missed a penalty when they were winning 1-0, by the way. But the fact that Justin Kluivert scored in the second half just gave Valencia a proper breather. Mm. And they escaped relegation this weekend. Obviously, there is still a long way to go. But for me, this is the moment of the week because Valencia got 2 wins in the last 3 games. Ooh. And they are little by little improving, you know, their really bad start of the year.
How's young Justin Kluivert been getting on there?
It's been stop start, a bit slow for him. I don't think Gattuso like him as a player that much. Mm. And well, he's been vibrant sometimes. You can see that he's got a lot of quality, but he needs too many chances to score a goal. But this time, fortunately for Valencia, he did score it.
Okay. While Alvaro was talking, Rafa, you were busy Googling on your phone for your moment of the weekend.
What happened again this weekend?
My moment of the week, James. Does the name Henning Matriciani mean anything to you?
Damn. I want some of what he's selling.
Well, I think that he might have some Italian heritage.
Uh-huh.
Possibly.
Is that the Christian name? That gives that away.
No, that is the second name. He was a fourth division player 2 years ago who was picked by Schalke and now suddenly has started playing and has become a really important player for them. In the last minute of the derby against Dortmund, he made a last-ditch tackle and the whole stadium stood up and celebrated. And Schalke then did a really nice mock-up of Matriciani with the Ballon d'Or
right.
in the smoking because he was so important in that 2-2 draw.
Whose shot was it?
Mo Dahoud.
So Mo Dahoud couldn't get past the Matriciani. Yeah.
I don't get it.
Anyone in a trattoria will know what I'm talking about.
I don't get it. What's the joke?
Matriciana is like a
classic Roman dish.
Yeah, with your pancetta, and you've got your onions, you've got your tomatoes.
Okay.
It's probably my favourite.
Not familiar
is it your
with
favourite? With bucatini, but that didn't work with pasta. So.
A matriciani is a favourite.
A matriciana, but you know.
Okay.
Sorry, listener, we'll move on. Hey, what's that you're saying? Champions League, you're right, it is. Second leg of the last 16 coming up Tuesday, Wednesday, and some mighty big matches, perhaps none more eye-catching than the one at the Bernabeu.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network and sponsored by LiveScoreBet. You can get the latest football betting odds at LiveScoreBet.com. It's over 18s only. Please bet responsibly and be gambleaware.org.
Uno, dos, tres, cuatro y cinco al Liverpool y además en Anfield marcó Karim Benzema.
The sound there of Real Madrid absolutely doing Liverpool last time these two teams met at Anfield a few weeks ago. You'll recall it was 5-2 to Real Madrid. Now since then lots of things have happened. Real Madrid went a little bit off the boil and Liverpool did one of their mighty wins, that 7-0 against Man United. So the question, Alvaro, I'm going to ask you is, could they?
It's going to be very difficult, but we have seen teams just about to come back against Real Madrid, like, for example, in last season, Champions League. I remember that Chelsea was winning 3-0 at Santiago Bernabeu for a little while until, you know, Real Madrid managed to score two goals and Rodrigo and Modric invented for me what it was one of the goals of the season. One of those that doesn't go to the Puskas Award because it's a combination and not a beautiful bicycle kick. But I think that Liverpool has been able of beating Napoli this season, which not many teams have been able of doing. Then they beat Manchester United 7-0, Bournemouth 9-0. They beat Manchester City as well. So there is some fire in them and there is some danger in them. We all know about that. And I think that Real Madrid has to be very aware of that. Of course, Real Madrid is overwhelmingly favorite, but preparing a game like this is not easy for them. Because if Real Madrid defends and they won't, probably they will concede goals. I think that they will probably face this game as if it was a 0-0 in the first leg and they will try to win this one.
Some fantastic results there, Alvaro. Am I right in saying, though, that those have all been at home, whereas on the road, they've only won three times and they tend to do things like lose at Bournemouth?
Yeah, I'm trying to think about it now. Probably their most meaningful win away this season has been beating Ajax at Johan Cruyff Arena. I think, yes, you're right with that. I mean, we saw the first leg. I think Liverpool were fantastic for 25 minutes, putting pressure on Camavinga. They were shifting all the game to the right. They scored goals. There were a couple of decisive moments, like when Eder Militao, I believe he was, cleared the ball from over the line as well, when Liverpool was still winning. And then Real Madrid scored five. So I think that scoreline was perhaps a little bit deceptive. But yes, coming back from a 5-2 disadvantage, scoreline, it's going to be very difficult. But I think that Liverpool has a certain danger in them. And I can see them, at least during the game at some point, just believing that they may have a chance if they score first, for example.
All right. Some teams you'd think if Liverpool score, get the first early, it might shake them a bit. But Real Madrid went two goals down at Anfield and didn't seem unduly bothered by it. So I guess we'll see. A 3-1 victory for them at the weekend over Espanyol. They went a goal down in that game as well.
Yeah, they were. And probably that is, you know, when you score early at Santiago Bernabeu, normally that wakes up the beast. I mean, that's one of the worst things you can do historically, definitely in the last decade. Because Real Madrid manages to wake up and then this time they came back. I think that they came back in style with Vinicius scoring a very good goal again. Eder Militao did score another one. Marco Asensio, a player who has been at times a fringe player, he scored the 3-1. But the overall performance was good. Real Madrid needed an easy win because in La Liga they've been struggling a little bit these last couple of weeks, especially after their defeat against Barcelona in the Copa del Rey. But, you know, I think that they group together in the right moment. Karim Benzema will be back, and he's very important. My only question is who is going to play as a left back for Real Madrid. That's going to be interesting. I guess that Nacho will be the man, because I think that Camavinga, he's not a natural left back, and he may suffer with someone like Mohamed Salah. We saw at Espanyol goal, in Espanyol goal the other day, that Camavinga didn't know how to defend the long ball to the right winger of Espanyol, and this may happen a lot in the game against Liverpool. So, Theo Ancelotti will probably play Nacho there in that position, unless Ferland Mendy isn't ready to play. I mean, he's back in training, but I don't think that he's ready to play 90 minutes.
What about the assist from Tchouaméni on the Militao goal? Wow. Outside of the right foot cross, like Quaresma, is Modric teaching him how to use your outside of the right foot?
I mean, Tchouaméni is showing his potential plenty of times. The only problem is that his positional game is not still the favorite thing of Carlo Ancelotti. Ancelotti is working with him a lot on that. But yeah, I mean, he has got like a good landing in Spanish football.
Does anyone see Liverpool with a chance in this game?
They have a chance, but it isn't a low percentage. Mm.
They're just so unpredictable. They can go and win 3-0 there, and they could also lose 4-0. It could be a 3-2 win or 3-2 defeat too. It's just impossible to predict. You know, I think the talent that they have up front, if it clicks like against United, and they are ruthless and take the chances they have and the half chances they have, then anything is possible, and it's only a Real Madrid team that is a bit vulnerable too. Mm.
They will have to put a very brave performance, that's the thing. And I think that if you put a brave performance at Santiago Bernabeu with the quality that Vinicius has in the counter-attack, that can cost you as well. And I didn't like what I saw from Virgil van Dijk against Bournemouth. I think that some of his actions were, and especially the one in Bournemouth's goal, I think that he just thought that that player, I think that it was Outara, was never going to get that ball. And that is unacceptable in a centre-back. I mean, you cannot do that. And I think that it's going to be a very difficult game for Liverpool's defence, and especially for Trent Alexander-Arnold.
Mm. Maybe their minds were already on the Real Madrid clash. And maybe Real's minds might be this midweek on the game they've got coming up at the weekend, which is only El Clásico. And El Clásico, which is not just the top two, Alvaro, but it's got added spice because of the corruption business.
Oh, yeah. And this weekend, for the first time, we have seen animosity, clear animosity from the stands towards Barcelona. It happened in Bilbao. To start with, Athletic Club Bilbao and Barcelona, they've been playing too many finals against each other. And what it was 15 years ago, like a good brotherhood between Athletic de Bilbao and Barcelona, because they were two sides and clubs that like each other, has turned into something different. Mm. Because Barcelona has beaten Athletic Club Bilbao in many finals. And we have seen, for example, Neymar doing a Lambreta in one of the finals when Barcelona was winning.
Lambreta?
Lambreta is when you flick the ball over your head.
It's a really... Lambreta? Where does that come from?
From Portuguese. I mean, Portuguese language, yeah.
James?
Lambreta.
Lambreta.
A Portuguese correspondent.
Yeah. So yeah, the animosity has been there between Athletic Club Bilbao and Barcelona, but this time it took a different level completely because there
what
was...
What did you do, Alvaro? We all know that you're Capo Ultra on the Catedral.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean...
Those bank notes were there.
Printed and sent by our
with the words
I have the PDF.
Or the word mafia written on them.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. That was one of the things. It was the Íñigo Cavacas ultra fan base who created those notes. They were thrown at the pitch before the game. Mm. And then every decision that the referee made, obviously, was taken very badly in Bilbao, worse than ever.
What, people shouting, ka-ching! And that kind of thing. This all coming days after the Spanish prosecutor officially charged Barcelona for continued sporting corruption in relation to their payments to the former referee chief, José María Enríquez Negreira. Now, the Spanish prosecutor has been joined in his action by who?
By Real Madrid.
By Real Madrid, who are facing Barcelona this weekend.
Yes.
Ooh.
And there won't be a lunch, huh?
It won't be?
There won't be a lunch for the first time.
I think that they won't. Yeah. I think that they won't, but I don't have that confirmed. But, you know, it's very common in Spain that the boards before a football game, they meet and they have lunch together before the game. This time it may not happen. But the thing here is that Barcelona and Real Madrid, they have had good institutional relations for the last 2 or 3 years. Mm. And this is this switches the dynamic completely.
They're effectively suing Barcelona, are they?
They are joining. The public prosecutor.
Okay, basically. The other clubs as well.
And it's the other clubs too. Yeah. But Real Madrid was the last to do it. So the rest of the clubs were like, why don't you do that? Well, in reality, Real Madrid and Barcelona, they been together for the last 2-3 years because they joined forces for the Superliga.
Can the Super League survive 33% fewer teams?
Juventus, Barcelona. I mean, Real Madrid is the only one standing there. I mean, with a so far impeccable, you know, record.
Yeah, absolutely.
So far, I guess. Yeah. Well, but how do I put all this? I think that Spanish football is in crossroads right now. This is the biggest scandal that has ever happened in Spanish football. From 2001 until 2018, Barcelona paid $7 million to a man, Enriquez Negreira. The Spanish tax office is reporting that Enriquez Negreira just withdrew amounts of up to 20,000.
For what? Small amounts.
Yeah, small amounts. Yeah, but 20,000 is not such a small amount.
Oh, okay,
anyway.
Right.
Yeah, up to 20,000, and they will ask him why did you do it and where did this money go? Because imagine that went to the pocket of a referee, for example. But the investigations will be on course. The important thing is that 2 weeks ago we were saying La Liga cannot take Barcelona to court because that prescribed or that was time barred according to La Liga's regulations. La Liga's rules say that after 3 years, the things are time barred.
Sure, yeah.
But the public prosecutor could, but they had to do it before June, and they have done it already.
And they've done it?
Yeah.
Wow.
Is there a way that it could be proven that Negreira influenced the referees or anything like that? Because this is the thing. We talked about it before in Calciopoli. Yeah. They had wire tapes. They had proofs that they were discussing the referees and doing this and doing that. In this case, even if this morning we learned that Sandro Rosell told Laporta what they were doing back in 2003, I think it was, saying like we're paying him and we have to keep paying him for the referees to be good with us. Is that enough to prove anything?
Maybe not. Maybe we need the referee to step up and say, look, I was one of those who got this money or who got called by Enriquez Negreira and I said that I didn't want it. But, the charges are more than all that because it's not only the accusation that Barcelona is buying games. Barcelona has been accused as well of corruption, disloyal administration or irregular administration and using false documents. So it could be the case that Barcelona gets sued and sentence for other things that are not necessarily much fixing. But anyway, Barcelona sent $7 million to this man, to Enriquez Negreira, and that is something that will be discussed. The likes of Valverde and Luis Enrique will have to appear on court again. So, no, not again, but they will have to appear on court as well. And, this is a snowball that is going to become bigger and bigger, but what we saw this weekend is that finally there is a massive animosity for Barcelona among every fan base, because what they have done is scandalous. I mean, just paying $7 million to this man is enough just to stain their reputation for a very long time.
UEFA will look into it as well, by the way. That remontada, I knew it was dodgy. That referee was dodgy. German referees, too easy, too corrupt.
Alvaro, in similar cases in other countries, we've seen one club be the focus at the start, but then it's revealed that other clubs have been involved in similar practices. Briefly, is there any suggestion that any other outfits might have been paying money? Are they investigating anybody else?
No. Not at the moment. We have had different cases. For example, what in Spain we call maletines.
Yeah, sure.
You know them? Mm-hmm. Like basically paying someone to win. For example, a club, Athletic Club Bilbao, let's say, pays Levante to win their game, which they should anyway, because they depend on suitcases. Levante to stay in Primera División. That in the past happened a lot. It doesn't happen anymore. But buying referees is something that I cannot recall any precedent of any club buying referees.
There you go. Well, a huge story there, Alvaro, and good to have you across all the developments as they come. And next up, we're going to move on to another of the midweek Champions League games, Man City Leipzig.
This is the Totally Football Show, sponsored by LiveScoreBet. With Bet Builder from LiveScoreBet, you can combine markets from thousands of options to create your own bet on the biggest football fixtures in the Premier League, the Champions League, the EFL, and around the world. So if you think you can successfully pick the first goal scorer, the final score, the total number of corners, and whether there'll be a red card, then use Bet Builder from LiveScoreBet to make up to six selections and get a single bet with the combined odds. Or if you can't make up your mind, you can choose from the pre-built quick bet options. Bet Builder from LiveScoreBet. Building a bet just got easier. Find out more at livescorebet.com or by downloading the LiveScoreBet app on Android and iPhone. It's over 18s only. Full account terms apply. And of course, please bet responsibly and be gambleaware.org.
Hello there. I'm Danny Kelly, the host of The Athletic's Tottenham Hotspur podcast, The View from the Lane. Spurs may have managed to comfortably beat Nottingham Forest over the weekend, but don't put your popcorn away yet, folks. The drama is aplenty in North 17. Results have been patchy and many fans have made up their minds that Antonio Conte needs to go. So why hasn't he been sacked yet? And if he did go, who would Spurs bring in? Our expert panel of Jack Pitbrook and James Moore come up with all the answers. So why don't you join us? Search for The View from the Lane on Apple, Spotify or wherever you get your pods.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. The Athletic is the only place you can read articles by Daniel Taylor, Amy Lawrence, Phil Hay, James Pearce, Ollie Kay, and the very best football writers around.
Tuesday, Man City are hosting Leipzig after that 1-1 draw in Germany a few weeks ago. Rafa, once again, I ask, could RB Leipzig knock Pep's side out of the tournament?
I think it'd be easier for them to pull off a surprise than for Liverpool. It's not impossible, considering Man City's slightly uneven form this season. They haven't been able to control games and teams quite as much as they want to and quite as much as Pep would like to. It was interesting him having a go at Kevin De Bruyne in the pre-match press conference. Very rarely do you see Pep criticise one of his own players. But of course, it's still a tall ask. It's going to be tricky for Leipzig. If they play the way they played in the first half of the first leg, then it's going to be very difficult. If they play like the second, when they really came out and pushed City back and City had by their standards very little of the ball, then they've got a real chance. But they need to probably have sort of the game of their lives as a team. And it's been a while since we've seen Leipzig side completely functioning and firing on all cylinders. They've been competent without being that convincing and exciting this season.
Okay, they warmed up with a nice 3-0 victory this weekend over Borussia Mönchengladbach, moving up to third place in the table. The last German side to win a Champions League game at the Etihad. Do you know who that was?
I do know who that was.
And who was in charge?
And I was there, Pep Guardiola.
How funny.
In charge of Bayern. It was, I think, his first Champions League game, I'm right in saying, and it was a bit of a demonstration. Bayern were incredible that night. And, yeah, until then, no.
Since then,
City have almost a perfect record at home. Marco Rosa is quite interesting. It's his fourth knockout game in the Champions League and four times he's playing against...
They've all been against Man City. How many has he won so far?
None.
Okay. No Christopher Nkunku?
Oh, doubtful, I think.
Okay.
Still got a small chance of featuring.
But...
I think I'm right in saying.
Timo Werner, he's on form.
He's okay.
Okay.
He's good at the weekend. Yeah, nice goal. He's not great before.
He's still...
Timo Werner.
He's still not right. Something's happened to him in Chelsea.
Well, something happened to another set of German players at Chelsea last week, of course. The last Bundesliga side to take on a Premier League opposition was Borussia Dortmund.
Dortmund had come into the game at Stamford Bridge having won 12 straight matches domestically, but promptly lost, what was it, 2-0 at Stamford Bridge?
2-0.
Mm. And they followed that up with the Riviera Derby, and that didn't go according to plan neither.
Da steht Karaman, der köpft und Tor! Kenan Karaman! 2-2!
It was a draw, but it felt like a defeat for them because they were twice up. They played some good stuff. They controlled Schalke, but I don't know if you can blame them for sort of lack of focus or lack of ruthlessness, or if it's just a case of, as we saw at Chelsea, that their quality is just a little bit thin on
with
the ground.
The injuries
at the moment,
to
all the injuries and important players not performing. First and foremost, Jude Bellingham is going through a very lean spell at the moment. Lots of talk in Germany at the moment of why this is not happening for him.
What's the theory?
Well, some people are saying he's distracted by the unclear future. I think that's an easy explanation. It might still be true. But there are also people who have picked up on the fact that he's been playing with a strap on his knee for quite some time now. And maybe he's been playing through a bit of pain or not quite fit. In any case, he seems a little bit frustrated with his own game at the moment.
Well, the 2-2 draw means that they slipped 2 points behind Bayern Munich again in that exciting Bundesliga title race. Bayern, who made sure of all 3 points with quite exciting 5-3 victory over Augsburg, which featured several talking points. Great game from João Cancelo, who got the start here, scored his first goal for Bayern. Wonderful assist for his opposite number, Alphonso Davies, as well.
Yeah, he played really well. He played really well, and he came in a position where he's more comfortable as a wing-back, effectively, not in the back three. Nagelsmann again explained why people shouldn't be surprised. He doesn't play in a back three. It's not really his position. I'm still not 100% convinced because, especially against PSG, Bayern Jules was there with me. He enjoyed the night. Bayern played that hybrid system where it's three when they have the ball, but it's very much a four when they don't. So it's impossible for Cancelo to play that position. I'm not so sure. But then, of course, Julian Nagelsmann knows better. In any case, it wasn't just a good comeback for him, but also other players who've been either criticized or having a bad time. Serge Gnabry came back, did okay. Leroy Sané came back, did really well, also scored a goal. And Benjamin Pavard, who...
Pavadovsky.
It's such a difficult World Cup.
Right.
And came back a little bit demoralized. Really has picked up great form and scored two fantastic goals. And
the
now...
The second is beautiful.
Yeah, they're both really nice. They're both sort of strikers... Good strikers finishes, both volleys in the box. And there's talk of now him extending his contract at Bayern beyond 2024. He had basically told the club he wants to go. He was no longer happy. He was playing on the right a lot, not in the centre-back position. But things have changed, and now he looks like the player that Bayern fans really have come to admire over the years. He's been very, very dependable and scores the odd screamer as well.
Okay. Bayern going 2 points clear. Union also drawing this weekend. They have four games without a win. That was against Wolfsburg. What's the situation like down at the bottom, meanwhile, Rafa?
It's really interesting because that Schalke point gives them an even better chance to survive. It was their seventh game unbeaten in a row under Thomas Reis. Bochum won at Köln, which was a huge result. Hertha, only a draw. So they're still right in the mix. And Stuttgart got a very good point against Frankfurt, who, of course, Napoli's next opponent. But before we move on, I think quick word on Hertha. They've now become part of the 7-7-7 group.
Right.
The seventh team, I think, or the eighth that they've added.
Okay, let's list them.
Genoa.
Yes.
Vasco da Gama.
Okay.
They've got a piece of Sevilla.
Ooh.
Standard Liège.
Ooh.
The French one. Can you find that French one?
Yeah, Red Star Paris.
Yes.
Them. That's six. And then we're missing one.
Missing one or two.
Or two, possibly.
Anyway, it was interesting because you remember they had this big investor and they had 350 million euros, which they just burned through. And now the new investor has come and taken over 75% of the shares of the subsidiary company and has promised to inject 100 million euros into the team, which they really need because they're losing a lot of money. Apparently, they're losing up to 60 million euros this year, this season. So just staying afloat and staying in the Bundesliga will be a tall order.
777, who took Genoa down last year. I see Hertha are 15th. you know, could go down to the Bundesliga 2.
Bottom five, though, separated by 3 points. So it is very, very open. But that many teams in that many countries, the prospects of them encountering each other in Europe seems pretty elevated, even if most of them are doing their best to avoid any notion of European competition at the moment. But is there not a question about that with UEFA regulations of...
Only if you're in the same competition.
Okay.
And as we saw when Red Bull Salzburg took on RB Leipzig, UEFA were happy with a formal separation, even though I think in theory or in practice, perhaps the case wasn't quite as clear cut. We'll see. We'll see. At the moment, all these teams are very far from meeting in a European competition.
Indeed so. All right. As you mentioned, Eintracht Frankfurt are the next opponents for Napoli. And we'll talk about what's going on in Serie A and with that game next.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
You're listening to the Totally Football Show with James Richardson, sponsored by LiveScore Bet. You can get the latest football betting odds at livescorebet.com. It's over 18s only. Please bet responsibly and be gambleaware.org.
Two Champions League games involving Serie A sides coming up this week. You've got Napoli on Wednesday against Eintracht Frankfurt. Napoli 2-0 up from the first leg. Frankfurt have got Colomwani suspended. They've got no away fans for the game as well. Porto, meanwhile, will be hosting Inter, and that looks like the trickier fixture, particularly James Horncastle, after the weekend that Inter had. Friday, they went to the team in fourth last place in Serie A, Spezia. And what happened?
They lost. They lost in part because Daniel Maldini, on loan from AC Milan, scored against them. Lautaro Martinez also missed a pen, which begged the question, why did he take one when Lukaku's got a 100% record from the spot? Lukaku thought he got a point for his team with a late penalty, but they then went and lost. And it's piled a lot of pressure on Inter, not only in the league, although everyone behind them dropped points as well. So it hasn't really put their top four in much more jeopardy than it was already in.
Has it put Simone Inzaghi in any more jeopardy than he was already pressure. In?
Not in the immediate term, but certainly when it comes to reviewing his position at the end of the season, this past week will be looked back on because he has been undermined. He's done very good in the big games so far this season. You think of away at Barcelona, you think being the first team to beat Napoli. And they are in a cup semi-final yet again. And this is the thing with Inzaghi. He is seen as a cup manager. You know, he's always won Coppa Italia, Super Cup. He is Mr. Super Cup. He has led Inter to progress in the Champions League. You know, he got them out of the group stages, which something that Conte couldn't do, something that Spalletti couldn't do.
From a tough group as well.
A tough group, but I'm talking about last year.
Okay.
And he's done it again this year, and they can reach the quarterfinals. But they have to go to Porto, and Porto have a formidable reputation in Italy because they overturned a 1-0 defeat to Roma a few years ago. That was a Roma side that had reached the Champions League semifinals. They knocked out Pirlo Juventus. They beat AC Milan last year. And they also knocked Lazio out of the Europa League. So it is a place where you go with real trepidation. And, you know, as much as Inter can maybe fall back on this, we do well in the big games, you wonder how long they can sustain that and whether it'll catch up with them. But I do think, I mean, we've seen it with the other Italian teams that are in the Champions League and the other European competitions, because they know that they have no chance of winning the league title, their heads are more in Europe this season. You saw it with Milan, for example. They lost to Fiorentina. They then went to Spurs, got the result they needed to progress to the quarterfinals of the Champions League. You saw it at the weekend when Inter lost to Spezia. They have probably had their minds on this game. And it is, you know, really important financially for the club. So many players out of contract at the end of the season. So many players on loan who might go back. They really need this money to kind of invest in the team in the summer. So
it's the same thing for Porto this year, because Benfica is far away from them in Primeira Liga.
That said, they can't take their eye off the ball too much in the league, because there's an almighty scrap going on for the other three Champions League spots behind Napoli, who are now 18 points clear after defeating Atalanta this weekend 2-0. Well,
I think if you look at some statistical models, James,
nice. Yep.
Inter still have an 85% chance of reaching the Champions League. However, those models do not take into account one key variable.
What's that?
Lautaro Martinez?
No. No, the key variable is if Juventus get their points penalty overturned.
All right. So as it stands, you've got Inter, Lazio, Milan and Roma all separated by only 3 points. If Juve get there, Juve are now 10 points behind because everybody above them keeps dropping points. If they get their 15 points back, they'll be clear of all of those teams.
Yep.
So those four teams will be scrapping over 2 places.
Mm.
That's the
five
math.
5-2, yeah.
That's the math that the model does not take into account.
Yeah, and well, I mean, that case is rumbling on. The appeal's been rumbling on. Juve think they've had positive news from the events of last week, but we'll see because, there's a long way to go in that.
Could be three Italian teams in the last 8.
Yeah.
When was the last time that happened?
Good question, Rafa.
Good question, yeah.
Good question. Do you want to Google it?
Do you have a good answer?
2003, something like that.
It feels like a long time ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does feel like a long time ago. I know that, you know, obviously the last round of games with the number of wins and the no defeats went back to 1991 across all competitions. But in terms of 3 in the last 8.
Even in the Europa League
listen,
as well.
We just plain don't know.
Yeah.
Plain don't know.
In the Europa League as well, they're doing so well.
Yeah. When was the last significant win away of Inter in the Champions League? Because last season against Liverpool doesn't count because they didn't qualify. But you have to go far back, maybe to Camp Nou. They didn't win at Camp Nou.
But they don't need to win this time. They're a goal up from the first leg at home to Porto. We'll see. That's Tuesday evening anyway. Inzaghi, a big game manager, and Porto not the only big game he's got this week, because, oh my goodness, on Sunday night, it's only the Derby d'Italia against this Juve team, who are now 10 points back from the top four. A Juve team who had a pretty thrilling 4-2 victory at the weekend over Sampdoria.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a game we're going to be covering live.
Yeah, we've got a double header because it's the Rome derby as well.
Amazing.
Two more teams
Super
from
Sunday,
that
group. I would call it.
Super Sunday. Wow, the Rome derby. So you've got Inter against Juventus from 7:45 and then 5 o'clock, or our coverage starts from 4:30, we'll be doing the Rome derby. Probably Jose Mourinho will be tuning in because he won't be allowed to be there.
Yeah, it'd be good to have him as a studio guest, wouldn't it?
Would it?
I think so, yeah.
Do you think? Would he just do one of his gestures? Would he just sit there being surly and pretending to be silenced by the man?
Well, Salvatore Forti, who himself had been banned for a month, he's Jose's assistant. Mm. He has a record which is not too dissimilar from that of Christian Stellini at Spurs, you know, where Conte's having his surgery and Stellini comes in and basically they always win.
Mm.
It's kind of similar with Foti at Roma. So maybe it's not a bad thing. I think,
although this weekend it was without Jose because he was serving that 2-game suspension, and with Foti on the sideline, and they took on Sassuolo.
Oh, and they lost.
They lost.
Yeah.
But what a thrilling game that was. 4-3 to the Neroverdi.
Yeah. The Neroverdi, these games are really good often. I mean, it was Jose's 1,000th game last year, and they won it late, and Jose ran off down the sideline like he was the coach who burst onto the scene when Porto beat Manchester United at Old Trafford. But yeah, some good goals. We mentioned the Dybala one.
Yeah, mention it again. Go on.
Well, the whip on it. Yes. James, because I think it's a left-footed shot from the kind of inside left channel outside the box, and it just goes right across Andrea Consigli.
First time as well.
First so
you
time.
Use the pace of the ball, yeah, you don't control it.
And yeah, I think the only goal that kind of beats it, well, aside from Cavadadonna this week, in recent memory at least, is the one that Di Maria scored against Nantes. The trajectories these Argentines get on these shots. What do they put? What's in the water in Argentina? It's just incredible.
Do you want the answer to the question, by the way?
No, no, I'm going to do that. 2004-5.
6-7. No, 5-6.
Five, six.
Yeah, I say that.
You did, didn't you, Alvaro?
It recorded.
Yeah.
It was good because neither of those three teams were in the final that year. So.
All right. That's coming
Amo
up Sunday.
Oriente, Paris born and bred, by the way. Just wanted to make sure that everybody knew that.
Very good. Very good. That's what's coming up on Sunday. Next up, let's check in on some pretty remarkable events in Turkey.
We're sponsored for this episode of the Totally Football Show by Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform helping you sell at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. It's your perfect teammate, the Sutton to your Shearer, the Heskey to your Owen, the Mane and Firmino to your Salah. Whether you're selling I Belong to Jimbo t-shirts or Max and Barry half and half scars, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, which is up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. Plus, you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. And what's more, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 support is there to help your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Now, because you listen to the Totally Football Show, you can sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/totally, all in lowercase. So go to shopify.com/totally to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. That's shopify.com/totally.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Zaniolo. Zaniolo gidiyor. Zaniolo verdi pasını Rashica. Rashica Zaniolo gol pozisyonu. Zaniolo! Zaniolo attı. 57. dakika. Oyuna girdi. İkinci yarıda gol attı. Galatasaray formasıyla ilk golü. İlk maç. İlk resmi sınav.
Burke 026 says, Totally Show, can we get some love for Galatasaray? They finished last season 13th. Then assembled an amazing squad with the likes of Icardi, Mertens, Zaniolo, Torreira. And yesterday, this weekend, broke the league record with their 14th victory in a row. Yeah, quite the story there as the Superliga returns after the devastating earthquake that killed tens of thousands and left millions homeless. Football getting back underway again and Galatasaray picking up their 14th straight victory in the league. To tell us more about this incredible record and the incredible array of players behind it, we're joined now by the football correspondent for Hurriyet, Banu Yelkovan. Banu, first of all, welcome again to the Totally Football Show. Tell us about this extraordinary run that Galatasaray are on, extraordinary not least because of the disappointments of last season.
Yes, it's a very significant run that Galatasaray is now going on with. It's an all-time best. It's a record for Turkish league. That's why it's so important, but not only because of the win streak, but also it's the 100th anniversary of the Republic this year and the 100th anniversary of football in Turkey. The federation will also celebrate their anniversary. So that was a title that everyone is or was aiming for and everyone would like to have in their museum. It's a very, very special year for the country. And Galatasaray started the season quite badly and after finishing another season quite badly. And one of the two defeats of the season so far was in the second week. And all the losses, point losses, were before the World Cup break. And murmurs have long have started about Okan Buruk, the manager, how inexperienced he was for a big team, how he cannot handle the pressure, you know, all that jazz. And honestly, I don't know, it would have been very challenging if it hadn't gone into the World Cup break with a glorious win against Başakşehir. Galatasaray won 7-0, and it was really a very successful last game, and everything stopped then. And after, when the season restarted, it was like Galatasaray, like they became like the Avengers, you know, they bounced back incredibly. So it's not only Galatasaray, the rivals are also doing great, but Galatasaray has no losses. They don't lose, they don't draw, they just win. And psychologically, it's a bit of tough to follow that up. So Trabzonspor, you know, the champions last year, they had a similar streak last year, but it was more of a unbeaten run, not a winning run, you know. And Galatasaray now, they have, I think they lost in the last game, they break the record who before belonged to Beşiktaş, and it dated from the 59-60 season, and it was a 13-game streak. So it was another era, really. So they are doing really great and very surprising for everyone.
Okay. 1-0 the win at the weekend of Kasım Paşa with Nicolò Zaniolo scoring on his competitive debut. Lovely goal as well. It does sound, you mentioned the suspicions that Buruk wouldn't be able to keep a lid on things in the dressing room. It does sound quite an interesting squad to be managing, not just Zaniolo and Dries Mertens and Mauro Icardi, but you've also got Bafétimbi Gomis and notorious troublemaker Juan Mata in there as well. What a squad they've got.
They have an incredible squad. Everybody, you know, not only in Turkey, but I think many in Europe will be jealous of that squad. You know, it's incredible. In Kasımpaşa, you know, we had Icardi, Torreira lined up, Mata, then Zaniola, and Mertens was in the, you know, he wasn't playing, but he was with the fans. He was not with the, you know, where the injured players normally sit in the family. He was with the fans in the, up in the, you know, how do you call it, up in the stands. So it was incredible. You know, sometimes you just put stars and it becomes like a Harlem kind of team. And it is not a normal team, and normally, you know, when you put stars, two doesn't always equal four, because when big egos are gathered together, you don't know what will come out of that. But in Galatasaray, all the stars, they became like a team. It's that's, I think, that's make it so special. The substitutes, you mentioned a few of them, they don't make faces when somebody else scores a goal. They celebrate together. At the end of the game, the ones who played and the ones who didn't play, they salute hand in hand the fans who remain in the stands to applaud them after each game. It's like, you know, it's not only in Turkey, I guess. It's always in football. It's like a gambling, you know, when you put many big stars in one team, they don't always end up good, you know. And then you get also, you could be criticized about that for not knowing football, you know, when you put so many egos in one team like they did in Paris Saint-Germain, for instance. But no, in Galatasaray, it seems to work very well, actually.
Well, 9 points clear at the top of the table. Last season's champions, Trabzonspor, who you mentioned, are down in fifth place. They are a whopping 19 points behind. And they've had a special visitor this week, Banu. Steven Gerrard's out there. What's going on?
It's very exciting because Abdullah Avcı, who became champion with Trabzonspor with an incredible season, he had an incredible season, and they played good football, and they also break so many records, especially for Trabzonspor. But this season, after selling one or two key players and injured players, very important injured players, the results were not like last season. So he quit, just like the president also quit. I don't know if Trabzon is in a very good shape for having Steven Gerrard now, but it's for sure it's an exciting news for us as well if he comes. But Trabzonspor has many things to settle, and they may also prefer to go with the assistant coach until the end of season, which is not very far.
All right. Okay. Banu, that's magnificent. Thank you so much for all of that, and look forward to catching up with you again soon.
Yeah, hopefully.
Atenção é Edwards, passo para trás, não consegue Schermitt e remate, golo! Que golaço! De letra! Nuno Santos com um golo espetacular!
Ooh, while we're looking at other leagues, can we have a quick mention for Nuno Santos?
Oh, nice, what a goal.
Jules, tell us about what he did.
Rabona going backwards as well on the edge of the box, right in the top corner.
What makes you think I will run up to the ball and do that?
Genius.
Because you're right, you don't trust your right foot. So you go with your left foot.
Mm.
Instead of hitting it with your right foot, which you shouldn't do.
Yeah.
But clearly it was...
It's the run that really blew my mind, because you see people trying a Rabona, but they generally plant themselves first and then make... But he does it while running, which
it's amazing.
It is amazing. It was the first goal of a 3-0 victory over Boa Vista on Sunday for Sporting, who, of course, will be in London on Thursday taking on that Arsenal. 2-2 from the first leg.
Really good, this is going to be.
Yeah.
Great.
Excellent. Great game. All right. Hey, we haven't talked about Ligue 1 yet.
Woo!
We'll do that next.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
What's that, James Horncastle? Sounds interesting.
Yeah, this is the song which is taking over Naples.
Is it taking over Naples?
Oh, my God.
Well, it's. I would implore our listeners to go and watch the video of Alex Guarini's song, Osimhen.
Right. It's in no way disturbing.
No, he is dressed like a Franciscan or Capuchin monk.
Right.
An order of Osimhen, if you like.
Right.
And it's celebrating.
Do you think Osimhen scanned better than Kvaratskhelia? Is that why the it's a hymn to him?
Yeah, I think it would be difficult. But let's throw down the gauntlet for Neapolitans in their neo-melodic way of singing, because I'm pretty sure, in fact, I'm seeing there are Kvaratskhelia songs.
All right.
Around
Please,
here.
No, like...
But this, for me, is incredibly catchy.
Yep.
It's hard to,
There you go, listener. You got that stuck in your ear for the next who knows how long. Let's try and clean it out with a little bit of lovely old Ligue 1, where Paris Saint-Germain, who were looking to bounce back from a disappointment in the Champions League. Don't need to go into that. By Munich.
No, we don't.
No,
I think we
no.
should.
No, we don't. Looking to bounce back from that, travelled to Brest. And they were about to blow it again, drawing 1-1. After 90 minutes when Kylian Mbappe rode to the rescue again. But Brest, how did they let this happen, Jules? Didn't they know what was going to happen?
Yeah, I think they went for they played very well in the second half. And they were going for it really late in the game. And they got down on the counter, which was their game plan at the beginning. And then one ball from Nuno Mendes to Messi in the PSG half. And then Messi, first time ball towards Kylian in behind. And then 1-on-1 with the keeper he was never going to miss. It was not good from PSG. You take it, I guess. You saw some of the youngsters, especially Zaire Emery again, who was really good. But, yeah, I mean, this is the end of the season is like that. Already people are like, yeah, okay, they're going to win the title. That's all they're going to win.
Hang on, I thought we were having a title race with like Marseille and Monaco.
We were a few weeks ago, but not anymore because the others behind keep dropping points. I would love a title race, but everybody else keep dropping points. So now they're 10 points clear.
10 points clear. That's right.
So it's pretty much over. They've played Marseille twice already.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Marseille drew 2-2 with Strasbourg at the weekend.
Incredible end of that game. You were not watching because you obviously you were on we a very doing, good Juve Samp. Mm. But if you had a split TV screen like me, you could see the end of this game and Strasbourg scoring 2 goals in 1 minute.
How'd you do that, Just?
88 and...
How'd you get that split?
It's on Canal Plus. If you
voila.
You can split your screen in four if you want. Four.
Really?
So we watch 4 games at the same time.
You made them all football. Yeah. I'd have one maybe with... anyway.
Sorry, yeah.
Some and Japanese Aoru, film or something.
Maybe a Japanese film. Bit of Correa-san. Nice.
Aoru scored one on a corner and then a wonderful... We talked about goals of the weekend. I think they were outstanding goals this weekend.
Really?
In every league. We said about Portugal, we said about Dybala, of course, Guevara, and Aoru was outstanding on the edge of the box in the top corner for Strasbourg. 2-2, Marseille were down to 10 men after half an hour, Baleardi sent off. And they show again that they're struggling at home at the Velodrome, which is crazy because they such an amazing stadium with incredible fans, 63,000 of them. And yet it seems to be a problem for their own players.
Mm. Elsewhere, in-form Monaco took on even more in-form Reims. And got beaten by them 1-0. Of course.
Will still.
Still not loving defeats.
Still.
Still on fire.
Nice.
Very, very nice. Following Balogun, of course, has scored the only goal. He's now on 16 for the season. He's the, what? He's the youngest player to score at least 16 goals in his first season in Liga since... A player in the 60s, you won't remember this, Mo Salem. Sedan Torsi. Who's Sedan Torsi?
Sedan
Torsi. Oh, Sedan, like in the song?
They can't be the same. Yeah, but no. Right. Sedan Torsi. But yeah, I mean, it's 21 and 120 days, I think, or something like that.
Amazing.
It's an incredible season for him, for Will Still. Still unbeaten in 18 league matches now since took over. You could see, you find 19 in some places, but 19, Oscar Garcia was technically still in charge for that game.
Okay. So 18, because I have 17 written here, but you're going with 18.
Yeah, 18 for sure. Wow. It's 18 or 19, but 19, Oscar Garcia was still the head coach, the manager at the time.
Extraordinary.
So incredible for Will Still. And it's not just that they went to Monaco and won, it's they played really, really well. Mm. Balogun could have had a hat-trick easily. Still has next thing. To be a bit more clinical if he wants to, I mean, have the consistency and everything. But outstanding performance again. It's wonderful what they're building. They're 4 points behind the European places now. So it could be a very exciting end of the season for them.
Brilliant. Well, that race for European places is going to be the big interest point because the title's already gone. And what European prospects are there for Ligue 1 sides now?
Nice. Who've won the first leg against Sheriff. Tiraspol in the last 16 of the Conference League. Mm. And that's it. That's all we have left, man.
Crikey.
I know. Well done, Loïs Openda, who scored the fastest hat-trick in Ligue 1 in 75 years. 4 minutes and 30 seconds.
Wow.
For Lens. Really, really good. Amazing for the Belgian international, who'd scored a hat-trick before as well. So he scored 2 this season. And he beat the record for Matt Musilou in 08 for Lille. 4 minutes and 34 seconds. So pretty impressive.
It's really impressive that you can... Just drop those numbers off just the top of your dome. Yeah.
It's almost like if I'd watched the game and, prepared for the show. And then finally.
What as opposed to, Googling it on your phone as we go along.
So my moment of the week, and let me buy some time here. No, I just wanted to talk quickly on the Karim Benzema and Didier Deschamps latest spat.
Oh, what's happened?
Because Deschamps did his first interview since the World Cup for Le Parisien and Le Figaro, saying that... Going back onto the Benzema incident, of course, saying that Karim knew the truth, that the truth was that he had that hamstring injury, that they went for scan, that Karim himself told Deschamps, it's dead, it's over, I can't take part of the World Cup, that Deschamps said to him, take your time to go home, no rush.
Right.
And then the next morning when Deschamps woke up, like most of the staff and the team, he was already gone because he took that 808 flight to Madrid.
It's a good flight, that, from Doha.
It's a good flight. I mean, it's the first one to start with. So if you really, if you're in
the 808,
And as really soon popular. As that was published, Karim put a few stories on his social media saying, calling Deschamps a liar and calling him a clown with the emoji. And then saying that now he has to talk now for the people to tell his story, his side of the story.
Right.
Because right now we only have Deschamps from the beginning, really.
Right.
And Karim's people and Karim himself can... can talk off the record and brief you that maybe the injury was not that serious. Deschamps said that he would not have been able to come back before the semi-finals. So why keep him in the squad? You don't even know if you're going to get that far anyway. I think the Benzema truth would be quite interesting.
Good Lord. Oh yeah, Jules?
Have you got
the... I'm on it. I don't know if you would pick me to say.
Maybe there's some Piers Morgan, there's a few.
Piers Morgan, it could be Raphael Honigstein.
Maybe like there's some video evidence that he can provide. Oh, Karim. Oh my
God. But it's been a while since we had a full-scale player-manager rebellion. Well,
not in women's football, in French.
Oh yeah, not in the women's football.
She's gone, by the way, your favourite.
Yeah, so just give us the background on that story.
Corinne Diacre has been sacked by the federation. Mm. She's not anymore the women's head coach because the players didn't want to work with her. It's as simple as that. She lost the dressing room literally, and it was either there.
Did you say literally?
Not literally.
That is an offence. How can you lose?
Sure. I went down the corridor.
And it was there.
It's no longer there.
It's no longer there.
In the sense that we often use, like, oh, he's lost the dressing room, but we're not sure. Yeah. We say, it's a bit of a cliche. In this case, we know for sure that she lost the dressing room, not the location.
We're going to have to build a new dressing room because you've lost.
Because the players didn't want to play for her anymore. So it was either the federation went with Diacre, and then she picked other players, she selected other players, or they went with the players, which is a very dangerous thing to do because it's a big precedent, and sack the manager, which they did.
Wow. French football, always revolting.
Always.
Always. What's that? You'd like to play out with a little bit more of... Oh, see you, man. You wish. We're very happy to oblige. We'll hopefully see you next Tuesday or for Thursday show, rounding up the Champions League midweek action. For now, from all of us here, it's goodbye.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Discover bonus video content by searching for The Totally Football Show on YouTube and see the very latest subscription offers at theathletic.com/totally. The Totally Football Show is an Athletic Media Company production and sponsored by LiveScoreBet. Get the latest football betting odds at livescorebet.com. It's over 18s only. Please bet responsibly and be gambleaware.org.
The Athletic.